Okay, we are now going to discuss operating segments, and I give the floor to Nadia.
Good morning, everyone. We're now going to talk about improvements to IFRS 8 operating segments. First, I will remind you about the background of this project. The photograph of the proposed improvements to IFRS 8 was published in March of this year. Staff meeting in July, we discussed some of the main proposals from the exposure draft. You might recollect this discussion. The comment letter period for the exposure draft ended later in July. The team summarized all feedback obtained from comment letters and outreach, including outreach with ASAP, and presented the feedback summary to the board last month in November. As stated in the feedback summary, the feedback on the proposed improvements to IFRS 8 was mixed, depending on the category of respondents. As a high-level overview, investors and regulators wanted the board to go further in its standard setting. Various preparers, accounting firms, and the national standard setters questioned the cost and benefit of the proposals. As a team, we plan to seek the board's approval on the future direction of this project at the meeting in January 2018, which brings us to the meeting today, our meeting with you today. Before we discuss our plans with the board in January, we would like to discuss some of the ideas, our ideas with you today. The ideas aim to respond to the feedback we received on some of the proposals in the exposure draft. So this is the purpose of our meeting today, to get your feedback. Slide 3 summarizes 3 areas for our discussion today. The first area we are going to discuss is identification of Chief Operating Decision Maker, also known as CODM. Then we are going to talk about criteria for segment aggregation. And finally, we are going to talk about linkage of information and annual reporting package. Yeah, these are the 3 areas. So I think with all this said, we'll proceed with our discussion. And we'll start with our discussion about identification of CODM. So I'll refer to slide number 8. Just as a reminder, what we had during the PIR, so some entities struggle to identify CODM. Slide number 9 summarizes the proposal in the exposure draft. As you can see, the proposal basically emphasizes that CODM makes operating decisions. Slide number 10 summarizes feedback that we received on the proposal. Yeah, there is quite a bit of history going on, but it will all come together eventually. So, and the feedback was basically that the proposal and the exposure draft didn't seem to provide much clarity. And yes, as I said in the introduction, now we're going to discuss some of the ideas which we are considering as a team in the sense like how we can improve our proposals in the exposure draft. And Neely, who's our new addition to the team. I don't know if you want, like, probably most people know you by now.
I actually haven't had a chance to speak with each of you, but I'm Neely Shine, the new executive technical director. I've spent a long time working on segments in a former life, so I thought this would be an opportunity for me to learn the process, and I've reseated myself between Michelle and Nadia so they can kick me if they don't like anything that comes out of my mouth. But what we thought we would do for this session is break the conversation down into the 3 areas that Nadia laid out. So we'll start with identification of CODM, have that conversation, and then move on to the next and then the next. So starting with identification of the CODM, slide 11 really lays out some ideas that we are contemplating researching to deal with what we heard in the feedback. There's feedback about diversity in the board of directors, the CODM, or should it be a lower level? What's the definition of operating? If anyone has questions, like, we can explain what some of these ideas are. Otherwise, we will turn it over to you. We're very interested in your thoughts.
Basically, we would like to discuss some ideas outlined from slide 11, in other words.
Andrew?
Thank you. I was a little bit surprised to see this statement. Preparers found it difficult to identify the CODM. I should have got used to it by now, so I've read it several times, but it's not my particular experience. I think Europe, anyway, preparers, although it can require some judgment, after 10 years they've got it figured out, more or less, and I wonder if it's really sort of code for something else, like some constituents aren't particularly happy with the information that is provided as a result of the level at which the entities have identified the CODM. Just a question. Our view, having discussed this with our TEG CFSS group, is that if you're going to change the guidance on CODM, don't go any further, anything more substantive than the proposals in the exposure draft. We feel that the proposal to disclose the identity of the CODM will add a suitable degree of transparency, perhaps a little bit of extra discipline, if extra discipline is needed. But as for the three bullet points on slide 11, I would say that these are more substantive changes. These don't, at first glance, seem to lend themselves to any greater degree of clarity. They'll result in the same sorts of judgments as the existing definition and are likely to cause an unnecessary degree of consternation and disruption in the marketplace, I put it that way. And the third bullet point just looks like a rule. So I would not go any further than the exposure draft.
Andreas?
I echo Andrew's comments 100%. Being near Christmas time, and if I may offer a wish, I'd say don't screw it up any further.
Oh, that's nice.
That's not very nice Christmas spirit.
Okay. Do you have a Dutch background?
I've watched you long enough to know.
Best practice.
I want to particularly emphasise Andrew's comment that we haven't heard from our constituency that there is any concern about they would be unable to find who the CODM is. And I may just remind people that we do have a two-tier board structure. So we don't have the monistic board system where you do have executive and non-executive directors. And in that, we have figured out who the CODM is. So any change in the language that now commingles operating and strategic that says it's a group or an individual, it just screws up things. That people are confident now that they have found the appropriate solution. So this is why I said any changes to that would just create noise and create a stir.
Are you finding in your jurisdictions then that there's consistency in the treatment of similar fact patterns? So, you know, at first glance, I see fact patterns where you have a board of directors, and I appreciate it's different in Germany, but I see some where the board of directors is the CODM, and I see others where it is maybe a chief executive officer. And when you look at the surface, it looks like the facts might be similar, which would suggest to me that perhaps it's not so clear, but maybe that's not it.
I do not recall a single enforcement decision of our enforcer that had ever challenged the CODM, ever. So level of aggregation is an issue, mm-hmm. and we'll come to that later on, but the identification of the CODM has never caused an issue.
And is the lack of enforcement because the words aren't there to deal with the diversity, or is it just that there's not diversity?
I would say Corp Germany is just united in what is that mm-hmm. term in the German context. And there's no diversity, as far as I'm aware of. Mm-hmm.
Linda.
Thanks. So, probably reiterating comments already made, but so one of the things that we're particularly sensitive to is the notion of the word management and how that's interpreted versus the board. And in our jurisdiction, those are two very different concepts. And actually, I'm dealing with a new acronym lately. It's called TCWG, Those Charged with Governance. this is a new alert that came out from our association around the new auditing report. But the point is in our practices, management is completely separate from the board of directors. Mm-hmm. And so we would have a big difficulty. This is kind of under the notion of do no harm, which I think is more polite than don't screw it up. I'm going to be polite today.
Good guy.
Well, we'll see. We would have difficulty with the board of directors being the chief operating decision maker, because the function of the board in our jurisdiction is governance, not operating decisions. So that's the first point. And we test that regularly by understanding the information flows to the board versus the information flows to the chief operating decision maker. So you were involved in your past life on various segment decisions. I was probably on the other side of some of those discussions from a preparer perspective. But from my experience, we're very clear in our jurisdiction on who the CODM is, and it would not be the board of directors. So we don't have much new to say in that regard. The only other thing I would say is the concept of non-executive directors I would equate to independent directors in Canada. So I would look at your language just so that it transfers amongst jurisdictions. But we aren't encountering these problems. We had a big push probably 10 plus years ago for continuous disclosure reviews both sides of the border, mm-hmm. both from the SEC and the Canadian Securities Administrators around segmented reporting. And I think from that point forward, it was just a matter of people understanding the requirements better, and we've seen a kind of a decline in any of those issues. So we think the guidance is already well understood, and we kind of agree with don't go farther than what you've already done.
So one of the things I'm hearing is that you would view it as inappropriate for the board of directors to be CODM. There are companies that have the board of directors determined to be the CODM. So do you see that as different fact patterns, lack of clarity in the words, regulatory issues?
It could be a different definition in that jurisdiction around what the responsibilities of the board of directors are. Mm-hmm. So I don't particularly feel like just because we have these practices in Canada, they have to be global. But my concern would be, depending on how you write the guidance, you could actually open up something that would be, in essence, kind of in conflict either with securities law or the laws that actually govern the role of independent directors, and we would be put into a really difficult situation in terms of how to implement that.
Okay.
Kim?
Thanks, Mark. Well, in my jurisdiction, yeah, I think that this has been a challenge, and I think that probably by default, I think the board of directors tends to be identified as the chief operating decision maker. But I must say, I think the concerns are whether or not they really are making operating decisions, or the board effectively is making more of a strategic decision. So if you're saying you don't think it's the board, I share that view, but I hear what you say. I think many companies, certainly in my jurisdiction, would identify the board as the CODM, and there you can then see the consequent issues, because typically what gets reported to the board, you know, is maybe it's only going to be, let's just say, you know, three segments. And so then they say, oh, okay, from an IFRS 8 perspective, that must be my segment information because that's what IFRS 8 says, etc. But then elsewhere in the financial statements and in the accompanying commentary, you'll see a lot more detailed information and, you know, different segments. And that's when you've got the regulators then asking the questions to then say, well, you know, oh, have you now inappropriately aggregated to get to your IFRS information, etc. But because the starting point, I think, is arguably the wrong starting point, is that they're not even aggregating anything. They believe that that's the IFRS 8 starting point. But from the way they see their business, they then, provide different information. And I think for me, where this really becomes a challenge is where you've got a big conglomerate, and they then identify the board of the parent entity as being the CODM. Now, I mean, in a huge, you know, conglomerate, multinational operation, you know, are they really the CODM? And then you sort of start, you know, having these limited number of segments from an IFRS 8 perspective. But is the board of the holding company really making all of these operating decisions? So I certainly think that there's a real lack of understanding and appreciation. And I suppose, you know, I think the default has tended to be the board, and I think that's also why questions have been coming up to the ISB around saying, but, you know, if we've got a majority of non-executive directors, you know, then is it the board? And then some of the views are, well, no, it's not. It's a smaller grouping and all of this. But I still think that, yeah, there certainly isn't clarity. And while there might be consistency, that consistency might be saying it's the board, but I don't know if that's the right answer.
And if it's not, I'm sorry, if it's not the right answer, would any of these bullet points alleviate that issue? So the first one is looking at the lowest level of management that has responsibility for the entire organization. So it couldn't be the board. Go down a level. Is it the CEO? Don't go down too far, because those individuals or divisional leaders wouldn't have responsibility for the entire organization. Would that alleviate some of the problem? Or would it cause more problems, Linda, to many people's points?
Well, I certainly think that should force preparers to go further down, whereas at the moment I think they are just, because up to now it's been the highest level at which decisions are made, and so that has then sort of been, well, then that's the board, that's the highest level.
But do you think that the CEO would see himself as the lowest level?
Lowest level for the entire company.
Yes.
So.
But I think that would intuitively not go well. The lowest level in the company that takes decisions for the whole company. That's going to cause other problems.
So what problems would it cause?
Seriously, I mean, totally counterintuitive. Well, seems to me. But it is amazing that this is a problem.
Yeah.
Chris.
So ours is a slightly different comment, and I was a bit surprised by this, but the feedback was that the exposure draft proposals didn't really help much at all. And part of the reason for that was that it was seen that operating decisions and allocating resources can actually happen at different points in time. And so some people were actually seeing the allocating of the resources as being a higher level strategic thing. Mm. So that was actually conflicting with the operating piece. So I think if you're going to keep the allocating resources piece, it needs to be explained in what context or how that fits with the operating piece. But generally the feedback was pretty much as Andreas and Linda mentioned, is this really where you want to spend most of your time?
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, I've also just sat through an SSG meeting, and there's a whole lot of countries that are coming to IFRS. So my thing would be, if you're going to do something, I'd stick more with giving some examples that help clarify what you're talking about, not necessarily changing your words in the standard. But obviously hearing, don't stuff it up.
It seems, I'm trying to reconcile in my head how we've got so many people around the table saying they don't think there's an issue, when it was significant enough to be extracted from the post-implementation review and taken as one of the key areas that we needed to focus on. I'm finding that a little bit hard to reconcile.
So I think possibly, not that I did the post-implementation review or the exposure draft, but having read it all, I think possibly what's happened is the post-implementation review was done some time ago, mm-hmm. and there were a number of problems in those early stages of implementing the standard, and quite often they've been bedded down, as Andreas says. And I'm not sure that it's not that the problem isn't still there, or, look, we've sorted it, we don't want to touch it. And that's the kind of difficulty of staff we're having. You know, if we do touch it now, everyone's had all of those arguments, it's got to be, I think, valuable. And I think that's the feedback we're getting here. But I think probably Nick can say something as well, because investors have a different perspective. So that's why in reviewing the feedback to the exposure draft, we really struggled, because there were very different views depending on the nature of the respondent. So we couldn't say most respondents really to anything, because if you were a regulator or an investor, you had a very different view from a preparer and accounting standard setter.
And I think part of the problem, too, is when you look across the world, you get a different picture than when you look within a jurisdiction.
I was just wondering if that was part of it, that was sort of my leading question, whether the jurisdictions that have had some issues are not necessarily sort of corresponding with the membership of that.
And of course, it's also linked to compliance and enforcement. It's not just about standard setting. So as we go through this process, especially this project, I would say the issue of compliance and enforcement keeps coming up continuously, and it's also something we have to consider in our standard setting activities.
Anne? My point does follow on from Nadia's just most recent comment, but it was a question for Kim. To what extent did you think it's the position that the regulator had taken? Because when you talk about, oh, the company, one's doing this and one's doing that, I just wonder about the role of the regulator in this, rather than saying it's something that should be fixed by changes in standards, whether it's something that's more about the application and about how the regulator's responding.
Well, I suppose the regulator, in asking questions about the apparent inconsistency or disconnection in different parts of the financial statements, has raised this as as an issue. So you're right. Whether or not it's the regulator saying, well, this looks funny, but there's a plausible reason as to why it is different, or whether or not it is highlighting that perhaps the starting point from an IFRS 8 perspective in our jurisdiction isn't the right starting point.
Well, regulators guide the preparers. They do give their interpretation. I know they say they don't, but they give their interpretation of accounting standards. So the regulator could guide people into doing it a different way.
Yeah. François?
Well, I have a few questions, in fact, to those who, in fact, have indicated that there is no discrepancy or not an issue in their jurisdiction. And the question is whether, in fact, I have a few questions. The first one is whether you have, you are faced with the situation that Kim has described, which is that you may have a level of a number of segments that are disclosed, which is not in line with what you have in management report, which seems to be a good indicator that the CODM has not been identified at the right level. So do you have this kind of problem? And the other question I have is, if we were to continue on this route, at least to help the jurisdiction that have a problem, would the reference to an individual or a group that doesn't have governance responsibilities or is unlikely to have governance responsibilities help or be a problem?
I make no claim to have done any kind of research or analysis on whether across various jurisdictions in Europe, different companies with similar governance structures are identifying the CODM at the same level. The point I made is I'm not aware of widespread complaints by individual preparers that they're finding it difficult. That's not to say all preparers that should be similar are getting to different decisions, but I do think that if there's a required disclosure of the level at which the CODM has been identified, that would over time facilitate the kind of comparison that we haven't yet done.
Nick?
Yes, just to follow up in terms of the user perspective, this is a very passionate issue for users, and they are frustrated, I expect, by sense of over aggregation that we have too few sectors and too few line items as well, so in two dimensions, and that goes back to Kim's point, I think, and where has this ended up at the board, and is that then influencing the number of segments where perhaps it shouldn't have done? I'm not sure where we've landed in terms of bringing operating decisions into the equation necessarily helps. I think that has perhaps created some more confusion, because some of these operating decisions can go way down to the organisation. And so I probably think it's better still to focus on the allocation of assets. But it's finding that right middle ground in terms of, and it probably goes back, if this information isn't being used at the managerial level or different information, what's going on?
Yeah, that's interesting, because allocating the assets is also, that would actually be more confusing in some ways, because then that could take you up to it is the board that's responsible for allocating assets, not your chief executive officer.
But perhaps you'd think they'd be getting information about those divisions where they're allocating the assets on that basis of those businesses. It would seem odd to me that they weren't.
Hal?
Yeah. Last year we had a similar, you know, project that was being discussed going through the research agenda. One of the topics was the CODN and the criteria and everything, and we just didn't see a problem to solve. And so it wasn't so much who the CODN was, but it was what, and I think really to Nick's point, what they were reviewing. Yeah. And that's, you know, what led us to focus in on what we're thinking of as the rows and columns projects, you know, disaggregating the rows in the income statement. What are the columns? How are they aggregated? And what are the relationships, which I think is really your third point, what are the relationships, the linkages between the two? So we just didn't see CODM as an issue.
I mean, a question that I have then is, you know, in a, you know, a multinational organisation, is there really only one chief operating system? Or again, is it, going back to some of Chris's comments and questions, that at a board level, you've got, you know, allocation of resources, but when it comes to actually, you know, making the operating decisions, you could have, you know, different CEOs in respect of the different operations really, you know, running those businesses. So at the consolidated level, who is the CODM, and is there only one CODM? Or do you end up by saying, well, we've actually got, you know, the CEO of this business, the CEO of that business, the CEO of that business, and so we've got four CODMs? You know, I don't know, and I think for me that's where there is some confusion then, as to, you know, so by bringing in it's making operating decisions, that tells me it's at a lower level, but then doesn't sound like there's only one. It sounds like there could be a number. But I don't know. Is that what you're thinking of, or is that...
No. No. I mean, so from previous life, what I have seen repeatedly in practice is that you'll typically have one. A CODM group does exist, but less frequently. But you typically have one who's responsible for the entire organization. Because, again, if you go down to that divisional level, Division A has no ability to say to Division B, I want your resource because I'm short-staffed, I'm going to pull him or her from me. So yes, you can go down to, operating takes you down a level, but you can't go too far down because you have to still have the entire reporting entity within your purview.
So that would be a great example.
Correct, and I think that would be
that
useful.
That would actually be a lot of clarity.
And that's what we were trying to get to with this first bullet point. I think lowest level might have not been the right word choice.
I think it helps with that operating decision. It's the allocating that actually brings the two pieces together. When as you read them in isolation, you kind of go, I can get different.
Yeah, and I think maybe, would it be helpful to clarify, this is just me talking, kick me if I say something, but... when I think of allocating resources and assessing performance, I view it as two sides of the same coin. So allocating resources would be the budget decision, and then assessing performance would be the quarterly budget to actual comparison. So I'm not thinking of allocating resources as strategic acquisitions of another company. Does that add clarity at all?
Would the budget decision normally be very high in the organization, the board of directors?
Right, but so that's the other thing, too. The standard currently doesn't contemplate, and as we've drafted some of these ideas, we're not contemplating the notion of the ultimate decision maker. We're contemplating who's typically making the decision. So the example I would use in this organization is Hans and Sue are my bosses. They can overturn everything that I might decide on, but realistically, every staffing decision, I don't think.
Ellie, you're too far away for me to kick you. So. I am trying to think who would be the CODM of my organization. Our organization. Oh, it's not my organization. Yes, it's not clear at all. Okay, we'll take this offline, Neil.
Kind of limiting, all right.
Work that out.
people, and not specifically, but what might be useful is, I don't know, putting together some sort of, want to say, educational material or like case studies or something. So even if it's something, even if it's not authoritative, but it might be worthwhile, you know, where I'm saying if people are comfortable that, well, they're getting to the right answer, it might be worthwhile having that information shared to provide some insight.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you just have to go, it's a rebuttable presumption, it's the chief executive officer, unless you've got something.
The education material, I'll be very careful to stay on the rights, clearly on the right side of the interpretation versus education boundary.
Okay.
It's always a challenge with the standards that have been around for a
while.
Thank you very much, Christian.
Thank you for this clarification.
I'm not being sarcastic or anything. We have been battling with this very issue for a really long time now, and it's extremely sensitive. Like, whatever we do seems to cause more questions than answers. And also another constraint that we have in this specific issue is to get convergence with US GAAP, because whatever we do, we don't want to diverge too much. So, like, there are quite a few constraints to keep in mind. So I think we heard your message, and we'll consider it. Yeah. So we are moving on to second area, which is criteria for segment aggregation. So the CODM identified operating segments, and now we're talking about aggregating operating segments into reportable segments. And feedback that we heard during the PIR was that I'm on slide 15, many preparers and auditors had difficulty in practice judging when to aggregate segments. Rightly or wrongly, in the exposure draft, the proposals focused on similar economic characteristics of the aggregation criteria. As you know, there are three steps on the aggregation criteria, but as I said, for various reasons that I explained in the exposure draft, the board focused on similar economic characteristics, and the route the board decided to take at the time was to add more examples of similar economic characteristics. So the feedback to the exposure draft was similar to the CODM feedback, in the sense that, like, we see you added more examples, but can you clarify X, Y, Z? So in a way, it also raised more questions than answers. People started questioning what's long-term, what's similar, what's economic characteristics, etc. And what we did on slide 17, and Neely is going to take over in a second, is basically to step back a little bit and look not just at the similar economic characteristics, but potential other approaches to the aggregation criteria. So we're stepping back, as I said, from the exposure draft and broadening our scope of potential solutions. And at this stage, Neely will take over.
So slide 17 lays out three possible areas that we could research. The first two are actually coming from the FASB staff. They have a project on their agenda, and I'll turn it over to Hal in a second just to talk about why you've taken it on and the status. The one thing I would note with respect to the first two bullets is they appear in my mind to basically be taking away the judgment involved in aggregation by simply saying you can't aggregate to some extent, which would add some simplicity for preparers, and it would also provide more disaggregated information for users, so there might be some benefit to that. And then the last bullet I will cover as soon as or after Hal discusses the first two.
Not certain where to go from here, but okay. we actually have a meeting next Wednesday the 13th, losing track of my days here, to start looking at, you know, like I said earlier, what information the CODM is looking at and how to relate that down to the various segments. We've got basically two extremes that we're going to be debating. One is put in some size test, if you will. If it's X, and of course we'll debate whether it's 10% of what, 5%, 15%. We'll have that size test debate. But we'll also debate the other extreme and no criteria, but maybe some practical limit, no more than 10 segments. So we're going to have that debate, and then there'll be a series of debates after that. We're going to stage this in, very much like we did the hedging project, where we took groups and tried to start eliminating things that we just didn't think would work, and then get down to what aggregation do we think is appropriate. And what's really triggered a lot of this discussion is that when the standard was originally contemplated, I think in the 90s, we have very different technology than we have today. So what the staff did after initially deciding to put this on the agenda was go out and talk to a series of companies, both the companies and the software providers. And what we wanted to understand was what was the latest and greatest in terms of segment information and be able to slice and dice their companies. And we learned a tremendous amount. And we, you know, in part linking this in with cloud computing and how cloud computing is changing what's going on. You know, we think of cloud computing as centralizing from a security standpoint, enhancing security, lowering cost, but also changing the way companies do the analysis. And we heard that pretty consistently. Companies' ability to slice and dice has dramatically changed. Well, their approach is changing. What implications does that have for us? We don't have any really concrete answers, but the things like dashboards and flexible dashboard, new term that I learned, have been coming up more and more. So what that has done is led us more down a path that we're not going to quite go to electronic financial statements and have dashboards for financial statements, but it's led us to, I think, really that last part that we're going to talk about, the linkages between the income statement and the segment reporting. So we said we're not trying to change how the company looks at or presents to us their segments, maybe look at some consistency, but what are the linkages between those two documents, the segment information, the income statement, and then from there also look at the disaggregation of rows and how that would ripple through to the segments. So when you talk about your example that you've got in here, I don't know, whenever you want to talk about that, we can talk about some of the pros and cons of what you have there. Mm-hmm. But that's basically the gist of what we're doing. We've looked at what the CODM is looking at, how that's changing, what are the implications for us in a paper-based approach to reporting. And we're not ready, obviously, to head toward technology-based solutions.
Oh, can I ask you a pragmatic question?
No. We only deal in theory and concepts. So.
The question actually relates to the FASB's timeline of this project. And Great. The reason I'm asking, because it has been a long-term project here, and so far we really tried to converge, stay converged with US GAAP as much as possible. And it was actually, rightly or wrongly, was one of the constraints of this project, because we tried to stay converged. And
Yep.
So we want to continue to stay converged, okay. But those timeline is important for us.
Right there. like I mentioned before, we thought that the hedging project worked incredibly well. There were so many issues that we could deal with, and we started to group those issues in logical groups. We're doing exactly the same thing on this project. So we have group one, group two, group three, and group four. The basic timeline is January, March, April, and June. We're going to deal with each of those groups, and what we're looking for is in July to kind of pull that whatever that package is together and then do some extended outreach with the preparers to make sure that whatever collective solution we've come up with or proposed solution works from a cost-benefit standpoint. We're also doing some other things to kind of test the cost-effectiveness of various solutions. We're using XBRL data right now and if you looked in the invitation to comment, we had two or three examples that looked somewhat like the examples that you have, and obviously you all have seen them. What information is already available and can populate those matrices of information, and where would the holes in information be, and how costly would it be to fill those holes? Could those holes be filled? If so, how should we fill those holes? So that's kind of, we're running all these things parallel, but at this point in time, we're hoping to have something from a solution standpoint by mid-year and then do some extended testing with that.
So there's really two pieces, right? There's the piece dealing with the aggregation, you know, give the 10% or eliminate into the practical threshold.
That's kind of step number
and
one.
And then once you figure that out, then have some additional disclosures that would deal with some issues.
And that's the way we think of it as an aggregation component. Mm-hmm. How do everything they do aggregate up, and then how do we disclose that?
So step one being getting rid of some of the aggregation criteria are sort of the first two bullets on slide 17. And then the third bullet is an idea to just provide additional factors. So one of the questions that we'd heard is, what does similar mean? Give us more examples. So instead of being prescriptive, just factors to think about. And the main factor here would be similarities within the context of your business. So as an example, if you are trying to define what does long-term mean, well, if you're a startup company and there's more uncertainty to what the future is going to hold versus more stable, mature, steady-state business, long-term might be a longer period of time. You might be able to project into the future with more degree of certainty. If you're operating in a company or in an industry where a 1% change in margins is a very significant change, then if you've got two operating segments that are 5% apart, that's not likely to be similar. But in another industry where 5% change is more likely to occur, then perhaps that would be similar. So just give a baseline context of look at your business. The other thing that we would talk about potentially is considering just the breadth of the company's activity. So sometimes in past practice, and I'll exaggerate for effect, but companies might try to argue, well, similar means, well, all of our resources come from planet Earth and all of our customers are people, therefore we're similar. I'm exaggerating, nobody's come up with that, but the idea behind this third bullet is trying to be a little bit more narrow of, if you're in a restaurant business, then perhaps you slice your company more finely, that if you have one restaurant chain that's focus more towards high-end consumers versus fast food, that might be dissimilar, as opposed to if you're a diversified company with a couple of restaurant operating segments, airplanes, and, I don't know, real estate. those restaurants potentially could be aggregated because of the scope of the activities being much, much broader. Mm-hmm. Is that something that would provide any help, or maybe the FASB's path, would that be more practical?
Slide 17, we're talking about ideas and just pitching whatever you guys, whatever reactions you have.
Cédric?
Thank you, Hans. Well, first of all, I think our stakeholders are divided on the question. The preparers do think that it's difficult to have strong aggregation criteria, because it may lead to a kind of rules-based definition of the aggregation, which may not match with the reporting they use for their own purpose, which leads to additional explanation. That means non-GAAP information, which come in addition, which would be contrary to the objective of better communication. So it's complicated, and the aim is not may not be optimal. And in that respect, they support removing the aggregation criteria. On the other hand, we have the users, market regulator, which are very keen to have such aggregation criteria, but rather in order to disaggregate the reporting. The examples that you put on the slide 17 are rather in order to have an upper limit in the disaggregation, which is not actually the concern that the user have, because they think the issue is when you have only one reporting segment finally, not that you have too many. It's a difficult question, because on the one hand you have a very large possibility of defining your reporting per segment, mm-hmm. even in choosing your own GAAP, mm-hmm. On the other hand, you want to have some comparison criteria. Is it actually the main issue to be capable of comparing when you not even have the same gap in your reporting? I'm not really convinced about that. Probably the third solution that you suggest here to provide some example and list of factors may be useful in helping, but it's probably in that specific area a matter of enforcement rather than standard setting. It's difficult to have further guidance in that area.
Do you think, if it is a matter of enforcement, do you think that the enforcers need more clarity, or is it really just a matter of enforcement playing it out?
I think that there is already some pressure of the market regulator in having detailed information and consistent information with financial information that may be outside of the financial statement.
Mm-hmm. Andreas?
Thanks, Hans. I echo most of what Cedric has said. I think the core issue that we have been alerted to is really not getting to many segments, but to few. So I think the first bullet would certainly not address this. Rather, you need to come from the other end if you want to tackle that bit. As to the indicators or the list of factors, I must say I'm not really that sympathetic to lists of factors, mm-hmm. because it always bears the potential this is a shopping list and you tick the box. What particularly concerns me is your very last line there, in information that investors typically looked at. Mm-hmm. Because I think we have to bear in mind that the core principle of IFRS 8 is through the eyes of management, not through the eyes of investors, which is the difference. And it was a conscious decision. So and in that regard, I think I would probably be interested to see whether FASB draws that line, because I think health disaggregation point is certainly right, and technology allows a lot to be done. The question is that for the investors, or is that for management? Mm-hmm. Management can do much things. Whether they actually do it is a different thing. I think the struggle that we have heard in our country is really management is doing something, but is allowed to further aggregate than what they're doing for their operations. And that is where the concern is, because that eliminates segment information, which actually is used within the company. And so on these criteria, we probably need to work. But I think if we just take a market approach, then I think we really run counter the prime objective of through the eyes of management.
Can I just comment about, because that comment, that issue has come up a few times. And what's pointed out to us quite often is that it's not solely a management approach, ultimately, that decides what segments they're reporting. It's a management with an investor influence and input, and quite often that investor pressure of please break out such and such information. We're doing it. It'd be better for you to do it. Companies have come back and said, clearly we are looking at levels much more detailed than are required by, or that would be articulated in the segments. It's that question, at what point in time do we break that out? And there's a lot of investor influence. So you are kind of getting that last item picked up. It's not the primary criterion, but it's a criteria. It's one of the criteria that factor into how the segments are presented.
I mean, you could certainly also come from the point that management would be ill-advised to run against investors' wishes, because in the end, I mean, if investors then make sell decisions, I mean, that far back. So you probably have to go to your constituents and say, what is it that you want? And it has almost that stewardship aspect to it.
And we heard that pretty consistently from companies as we were talking to them. You know, there's a point in time when we can no longer say, no, we're not going to break that out.
Andres, if I can follow up, I may not have understood. With respect to, you said on the first bullet that this wouldn't address the problem. So I see the first bullet is actually removing all the aggregation criteria. So what your operating segments are would be the reportable segments, but there'd be a practical limit of 10. So I appreciate that the problem is not too many segments. So I saw this as solving the too few segments. Did I misunderstand that?
If it just were that, if I understand your bullet saying, if we included that in the final guidance, that would address the issue. And I wonder whether it really would address the issue, because if the issue was there are too few segments, this is addressing too many segments. Potentially too many segments and placing a cap on it of there being no more than 10. But if a company currently only reports 2, mm-hmm. I mean, how should this address the issue?
So what this is addressing is if you have, say, 5 operating segments mm-hmm. that are then aggregated into 1, mm-hmm. this is saying
you can't aggregate at all.
So you're going to show all 5.
At all.
Right,
but then the question is, How many companies, groups, and it probably comes back to a point that Kim made before, as if you are a really diverse group, a conglomerate, then there may be issues where you do have actually more than 10 segments. 10 segments and not 10 reportable segments, I think there is a distinction, and we probably have to work on that one as well. But for the majority of the entities, I suppose that the segments probably rarely go below 10. I think 10 is probably a number that we see, but it may be 8, it may be, say, you do have divisions, you do have business units whom are all managed. Mm-hmm. The question is, does that make a segment or a reportable segment? And does limiting the number of 10 really achieve what you want to achieve? That is my question.
The 10, you know, very honestly, is a paper constraint, is what I've heard quite often.
Yeah.
That's about all the we're going to be able to get so that you can physically see the numbers.
Yeah.
At least, I'd have to get my magnifying glass out, but yeah. if we were talking technology, we'd be talking a very different solution here, but we're still kind of in a paper-based solution.
And that's actually already in the standard, this notion of a practical limit of 10. That wouldn't be a new thing.
Andrew?
I can't really comment on the aggregation criteria beyond what's in FRAG's comment letter. I just wanted to say I found Hal's description of the work you've been doing to understand the implications of technology very interesting. And I felt, personally, for a number of years that this premise of a segment standard that's founded on the idea that there is basically a paper-based report that the CODM gets once a month is, if it's not already obsolete, it's going to be obsolete pretty soon as a premise. So in terms of a future-proof solution, I think longer term, I'd encourage the ISP to try and, as far as feasible, replicate that kind of study on a more international basis.
It's partly why we're focused so much on linkage as well, because we knew we couldn't go technology on the constraints of a piece of paper, but we could make sure that the linkages were more clear, which sets you up for the next generation of reporting.
And I'd be interested in your reaction. So going back to slide 11, one of the ideas to mitigate this concern about technology is to emphasize that it's more than just the papers, it's more than just the reporting package. Mm. Also think about the management, the organizational structure, also think about who compensation, who's accountable for what, also think about the budgeting process, to some degree future-proof that.
Anthony, you talked about the content of information, specifically about the aggregation criteria. What are your views on these options on slide 17?
Well, we express support for the proposals in the ED. So I don't really feel I have a mandate then to express support for something else. I'm a bit surprised by the proposal to remove the aggregation criteria, and I suspect that if we were to ask for reactions to that through our due process, they'd be very mixed, but I'm just guessing.
Chris?
So I was just going to echo a couple of comments. Andreas mentioned we certainly from our jurisdiction, the perspective was any issues were more about having too few segments than too many. And so if you look at it in that context, the aggregation criteria are not really the ones that are causing the problem. It's actually before that, the operating segments, and whether or not people are actually reporting things in a way that camouflages that perhaps there really are two segments and it just comes through and looks as though there's one. So I'd be more inclined to focus your attention on that piece, not so much the aggregation piece. But if you're going to look at it, I would certainly agree the first two bullet points on 17 wouldn't be the way to go. I'd be more inclined to be looking at the third one and trying to, again, provide some examples of what you think those similar economic conditions actually are. Because in practice, that was the one that was the greatest grief.
Leonardo?
Thank you. Yes, just to say that the aggregation of segments is an issue also in Italy, while the identification of the CODM is not an issue in Italy. And I think your proposal, maybe the best one is the last one, the third bullet.
Okay, we are getting close to the
Linda
time.
Avocado.
Oh, Linda, sorry.
It's okay. But maybe you were ignoring me.
As usual.
It's the CODM.
So just a couple of quick comments. I think in general I'd agree with people that typically what you find is a situation, and users will say this, that there aren't enough segments. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there is a tension between the user view, because they would like for everybody in the same industry to have the same kind of segment so that they can compare, which if you're going to go through the eyes of management, you're at odds there. So I don't know how you fix that problem. But if you say you're going to retain an upper limit, then the issue is how are you going to tell them to aggregate if they have to get below 10? So I don't think you necessarily move away from having to do something under your third bullet point. That one's particularly interesting to me, having been in a couple of different industries, that if you're going to do something there, you talk about similar economic characteristics, don't perhaps forget the notion of the state of maturity of these different potential segments, because one could be a high growth area, one could be really mature. And if you have the smaller one that's new but it's high growth, how quickly do you want to see that from a visibility perspective? And you don't want that masked by perhaps a bigger piece by aggregating the two together so that you can't see the growth. And there's always going to be an interplay because companies are worried about their competitors, you know.
They don't want to disclose
it. They don't want to disclose that. So when's the right time to kind of almost force that disclosure, because that information is relevant to users. So you're going to have some natural tensions here, but I guess what you have to do is really think carefully about what kind of factors you're going to use as examples or to describe what you're looking for.
Linda, you're exactly right, and that came through consistently in our conversations. At what point? That's why I mentioned that tension between the management and the investors. The investors are already making estimates. They're picking up little bits and pieces, and as that pressure increases, at some point it will get transferred over into financial reporting. I don't think we will ever come up with the criteria that will nail that to exactly the right point. So I think the only thing we can hope for is exactly the way the markets continue to work.
Thank you. But we really would like to carry on with this discussion.
Yes, yeah. Michelle's just checking if we can go 15 minutes over.
Not too much.
We should have
to borrow 15 minutes from the next session.
Okay.
I'll
summarize again. Thank you very much. That's very helpful. But needless to say, whatever entities do under whatever option, the information should be meaningful and should comply with the key objective of the standard. And in our amendments, we try to highlight this fact. So it's a judgment call. Judgment will be involved no matter what you do. And similar to the first issue, I think compliance and regulations play an important role in this disclosure as well. So moving on to the third area of the discussion, I think it's Prepara's favorite one, linkage of information within the annual reporting package. This is perhaps the most controversial proposal in the exposure draft. and it relates to the consistent identification of segments in the financial statements and in other parts of the annual reporting package. So there are two parts of the discussion. So there is the proposal to have this explanation or requirement to explain the differences in the first place, and then the second part of the discussion is where do you draw the line in the annual reporting package, what's the scope of the annual reporting package. As I said, both parts of the discussion got quite a bit of feedback, and people responded to the exposure draft, and we are thinking what's the best way to handle this feedback. And at this stage, we're moving to slide number 23. And the specific questions that we would like to discuss with ASAF members, Neely's going to take over.
Well, you might be pleased on this one. We don't have a lot of alternative solutions. What fundamentally we're looking for feedback on is the problem is inconsistencies, you've all noted. What are the options for solutions? The exposure draft explored disclosure is one option. Are there other options beyond disclosure? If disclosure is really the only option, then there was some feedback about the definition of annual reporting packet, and what are your thoughts about ways to clear that up?
Andreas?
You want a Dutch answer? My first reaction would be a question back to you. Mm-hmm. Is this your turf or is this somebody else's turf? Mm-hmm. And this is why we have, as the German standard set, reacted quite harshly on this proposal. Mm-hmm. So you ask preparers to do a compliance statement that they have complied with all IFRSs. They have duly done so, and they have produced information. If they had simultaneously or near the same time put forward other communication that doesn't come under IFRSs on reporting, there may be good reasons or bad reasons. Mm-hmm. But what I would hate to see is preparers having to judge why the information they put out elsewhere differs from what they have rightly done in IFRS financial statements. So that is the tension. I think my answer would be, this is probably not your turf, it's probably the regulatory space. They need to follow this one up and ask the question as to why they're doing this. Of your proposals, what I could put myself behind is proposal 6A. So, because that's within your remit. And this is something that's being enforced by our regulator already. So you do have the management commentary, and you do have the financial statements, and our regulator has more often than not come across issues where the information in the management commentary doesn't really resonate with what's in the front part, and they have gone after it. And I think that is widely acknowledged, that this is probably something that falls in your remit, and I think I will put myself behind it. The 6B, I have trouble for the reasons that I just mentioned.
Can I respond on the remit point, because it came up quite a lot, I think, in the feedback that we got. And I, speaking as one board member, don't think we are going past our remit, because we're not imposing any requirements in terms of what would happen outside the scope of the IFRS financial statements. All we're doing is sort of trying to respond to the concern that came up from investors that it seems odd that if we're through the eyes of management, that management would have different eyes that it's using for different purposes. And can we do something to try and help sort of not... We're not saying you're not allowed to use a different perspective in different jurisdictions, if you like, and stuff that's outside our jurisdiction. All we're saying is, can you flag to us when you've done that and why?
But why here? Why in the financial report? I think that's the wrong anchor. I think if there is a concern that the information is not as decision useful as other information that's being put out, but not within the financial statements, then I would rather work on the IFRS requirement, really. For instance, aggregation criteria, beef that one up to make it more compatible with what is being communicated out elsewhere. But quite frankly, we have heard the point that there may be two sets of eyes of management, because there may be different purposes and different audiences that are being addressed.
Which is fine, but then all we're saying is please explain to us why that's the case.
And why in the financial statements? That's my point. I would see that point far more in the other end, because you said what entities have to comply with, they have complied with it, you have the compliance statement, and now they need to say and demonstrate why they have done something extra elsewhere. But
well, no, but wouldn't that's not would, if they have a very different perspective elsewhere, giving that to investors, wouldn't that indicate that there may be something wrong in the perspective that they gave in the financial statements?
But then what?
It's a source of discipline.
You can frame it that it's part of your significant judgments disclosures, because what you're trying to explain is why you've managed to come up with a different judgment for something on face value should be similar.
I'm not holding that view.
But I think, to me, that's what it is. And I'd certainly say from an Australian perspective, it's the one thing that's actually helped clean up the whole issue about how many segments you have. Because the regulator did do it. But if you don't have a regulator that's going to do it, then I suspect putting it in financial statements is the next best option.
Andrew?
Thank you. No, I understand your dilemma. Desire to be helpful to enforcement bodies and others, but well, you know what we said in our comment letter. I'll retain that position. If I can offer something slightly constructive, I'd say you perhaps should consider in the well, now you have a management commentary practice statement project, whether some guidance on differences in segments could be incorporated into that.
Can I just comment on this one? Because the existing management commentary practice statement explicitly already states, actually in much stronger terms than in the exposure draft, that the segment information should be consistent in the financial statements and the management commentary. The problem with this approach, so to speak, is that the practice statement is not authoritative guidance. So what I'm trying to say, there is not much more we can do than we have already done in this sense, like in the practice statement. And I know we have been constructive, or trying to be constructive anyway. it's something that we have already explored and done. That's what I'm trying to say.
But the ask me is then, if you've put down a marker, if you like, if there are differences in the segments, best practice, let's call it that, would be to make some explanation, and I would question whether you should go any further.
But you also told us yesterday, and I'm not picking on you, I mean, European representatives as opposed to, I don't remember whether it came, you said it, but that the management commentary practice statement is non-mandatory, and also it doesn't apply in Europe.
Yep.
So to tell us to solve it by putting it into a document.
I'm going to use the word solve. Put down a marker.
Okay, Linda.
Just a quick thought. So, Francoise, to answer your question, in Canada, the securities law requires in the MD&A to have the same discussions. That your GAAP says these are my segments, or your financial statements, you have to discuss it that way in your disclosures in your management commentary. The other thing is, as we've talked about the preparers kind of thing, we talked about the regulators, but there's another stake in the ground, and that's the auditors. And I'm just looking at an audit alert that came out in Canada recently that talks about other information and talks about the annual report and reporting package. So you've got another proposed kind of discussion around this same content. So happy to share this with you, but I think the point is as soon as you move beyond. So I think everybody understands what the financial statements are, okay? And I think everybody understands what management commentary is, whatever you call it. But as soon as you move outside of that, then you're going to get a plethora of definitions, and I don't actually have a constructive suggestion for how you handle that in different jurisdictions. I think you need to understand what you're trying to do and if you can achieve it.
Cédric?
Just to pick up on what Andrea said previously, because our stakeholders have expressed the same concern that the reconciliation should take place outside of the financial statement. And I agree with what has been said previously. It may rather be a question of enforcement in that area. in France, the auditors are responsible to ensure that there is a consistency between what is in the financial statement and what is in the financial information outside. So, and on the other hand, they wouldn't feel very comfortable to audit financial statement with an information which is not in itself based on standard, because it is a reconciliation with a non-GAAP information which is outside of the financial statement. So that's,
well, I'm not sure if that now. I just read an article about an auditor who checked going concern by looking at the credit rating agency's judgment and analysts' opinions, all outside the financial statements.
It's not the same degree of assurance.
I would like to pick up on this point, because it was a popular point in comment letters. And we specifically have done outreach with the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board, which basically auditors as opposed to accountants. Mm-hmm. And actually, they were quite supportive of this proposal, because it's part of their responsibility to ensure that information is consistent between financial statements and they have annual reports slightly differently defined. But it's part of their responsibilities to ensure that this consistency. And although people did throw this argument at us, we had very good discussion with auditors, and they were quite actually supportive, and they said we can audit it and to support this proposal. Just for the record. Anyways, so how... I don't know how...
I'm
only...
I'm not crossing the CODM here. No.
Yes.
Get back to being serious
but
again.
We'll as well, though, now.
I wanted to just follow up on something Cedric just said.
I'm envisioning. I'm looking at page 6. In the slide deck here, I'm trying to make sure I understand what the concern is, because you've got the segment information, and here they have three segments. You've got the consolidated financial statements. The auditors have looked at both pieces of information. The difference, which is Proposal 8, is that reconciliation. What would be difficult about the reconciliation column? Because the reconciliation column really, it consists of three things. It consists of eliminations, which you should already know about because you had to do them for the consolidated, unallocated amounts, things that aren't allocated out to segments. And then there's a third, which would be probably the most difficult, would be, at least under U.S. standards, the segment, say, revenues, do not have to comply with 606 or 605 or whatever the standard is in that particular case. They don't have to comply with that. They could be on a cash basis. So you could have a difference between, in this example, the 850 and the 750, that a full amount could be simply, we have a cash basis for segments, and we have a, you know.
Sorry, I was not talking about
reconciliation
with financial statement and reporting.
Okay.
Between reporting information under IFRS 8 and any other reporting segment that would be provided
outside
of the financial statement.
Outside of the financial statement.
Exactly.
And that's where I would beg the question, why would you have differences outside, wouldn't you have, your starting point would be the segment as reported?
Happens. I agree with you.
Okay, that's the regulatory issue.
Okay.
Apart from the confusing end, I think this was a very...
Can I ask one question?
Oh, yes,
Noble. So there are many issues that we commented on that we had concerns with that are not covered in this paper, and we wanted to know whether you had plans to cover other issues, or you just wanted to consider these issues that were in the paper. It was just not clear.
They just these three issues.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you want to talk to us offline, by any means, feel free.
What I'm hearing is Nobu really likes this topic, and he'd like us to spend more time on it.
Okay, let's take a break till 20 to 12.